All right, I think we'll start off talking a little bit about, I gave you all a homework assignment last time. It's a couple of articles by a secular writer this time, John Roseman, who writes in our paper. In fact, this is actually photocopies out of our newspaper. Is there anybody here that didn't get this last week? What may not, wasn't here, or I know the Michons may not, so I'll give you a copy. You got one, right? But you want one for Amy, or you've already read it? Okay. You want an extra one for? Well, let me give you this. That one has pencil marks on it, so I can tell what the heck I'm going to say about this. Sorry.
I took one last week.
Huh?
I took one last week, but I'll take another.
Take another one. Okay. Is that enough for two of you? Is that okay? All right. Did y'all get a chance to read it, or make a chance to read it? I should say. Any thoughts on it? Now, again, this is a secular writer, so we're not speaking from biblical authority here. Two reasons to give you this. One, even secular writers can be in touch with what's going on in the culture, sometimes maybe even more than we are. And the other thing is that secular writers can line up with Scripture, even though they're not necessarily operating from that authority like we would be. So you can't just take them as authorities, but they're worth listening to, and they can be helpful. And I found Roseman to be generally pretty spot on in his general description and discussion of things. I read him on a regular basis and kind of nod and say, yeah, he's got that one right, pretty much. But what are your thoughts? I gave you two articles here that were kind of picked out of some or in recent copies of the paper.
In the first article, I thought it was interesting. He mentions, and even the first column, that it used to be the cultural consensus.
Yes.
Of agreement, common agreement. You know, we're all aware of how to train a child, and we have the same expectations for our neighbor's kids, and they look out for our kids, and
yeah,
we're on the same type of standard. And then in the second to last column, he says, well, confusion has replaced consensus.
Yeah, and that's sad, because I remember that time very well, you know, and I remember there not even being questioned that many of the things that are now under attack today, and it made for a better time. It was still a fallen world. There was still sin. Parents still made lots of mistakes. Kids, you know, we're not trying to make this out to be some kind of paradise, but as his article also points out that this has really fractured and caused disharmony, if you will, in society in general. It's breaking up families and marriages and even institutionally. You know, he talks about how he hears from teachers, I'm sure Paul could attest to this and other teachers, that today's parents are more likely to disagree than agree with school discipline. You know, it used to be, If I got in trouble at school, I came home and got in trouble at home because I got in trouble at school. Now, there was always a caveat in my family that my dad told me, now listen, you know, one of his big values was don't lie. Never lie to me. He made that a huge value in our family. It was just a big deal to him. And he said one of the reasons why is if someone ever takes advantage of you or abuses you or whatever, like a teacher or another adult or something like that, if you tell me something else happened than what they're telling me, I know I can trust you. And he said, so if you tell me, I can trust you, that the teacher did something different than what they said or whatever, then that's different. But if you did something and you got in trouble with the teacher and you should have gotten in trouble, you're going to get in trouble with me too. Yeah.
So, and he points fingers at the psychological revolution.
Yes.
In the 1960s, the so-called professionalism of parenting experts.
Yeah.
Have really only muddied the water.
They did.
Rather than clarifying.
Yeah. It was a strange time. A lot of things happened in the 60s, and I remember at the time scratching my head thinking, what is going on? I was very young. But just there were, you know, riots going on campuses. There were things happening in society that had a lot of people going, what is happening? And I don't know that we can ever fully understand all of it, but certainly there's the psychological revolution, you know, all the parenting advice that was coming out. And I remember my parents rebelling against the revolution. And they're saying, you know, that Dr. Spock was often held up as that's not the guy in Star Trek, this is another Dr. Spock, was often held up as sort of the point person for that whole thing. He wrote a book on child training that seemed to advocate a different approach. And I remember my parents saying, we're not taking that route, and we're doing it on purpose. You know, we discipline because we think it's the right thing to do, not just because society does it. And we're not going along with that. Well, it's good for them.
There's also a change in how, like, I don't know, the moral, landscape, or the ruler by what people viewed as right and wrong. And I remember my parents talking about how around that time, they remember seeing the very first girl to come to high school pregnant.
Yes.
And it was no longer something that parents hid. You know, the child was sent away from anybody they knew because it was a shame.
Yeah.
Then it all of a sudden became acceptable, and then you started seeing how just like the snowball effect.
Yes.
And so even I guess it changed parenting from little ones, but also on up the scale, there was just this lowering in the moral expectations of society in and of itself.
Yeah. And along the same line, you kind of reminded me of another subject similar to it, which is divorce. I read an article this week that went back and traced the history of no-fault divorce in the United States. Because it used to be you could not get a divorce in the United States unless there was abandonment, abuse, or unfaithfulness, period. And, of course, people started bending the rules on that, that wanted to get a divorce for other reasons. But they would have to basically sign off and admit that they called it mental cruelty, so they put that as abuse. And irony and sadness of sadness is one of the men that we revere as a president was actually at the head of that. Ronald Reagan was governor of California. He had gone through a divorce. Apparently it was a painful divorce, and he had to sign a paper saying he'd been mentally cruel to his wife. I think he just wanted a divorce. I don't know what the circumstances were. California accepted that, and the rest of the country very quickly, like dominoes, went with the idea of no-fault divorce. You didn't have to have one of those three reasons to get a divorce. Anything would do. And the advocates at the time were saying, this is going to be better for kids. Kids are having to put up with a lot of friction between the parents, and it's just going to be better if they can break up. It's not going to cause the divorce rate to go up. Well, that turned out not to be the case at all. The divorce rate sharply shot up after that. And I remember as a kid, I think I could think of one or two kids whose parents were divorced that was really considered sad and weird. That's not true today. So anyhow, lots changed in society, and we're seeing the aftermath of that, and it continues. The other article, just to cover it as well, there he advances what he considers simple precepts of parenting, and kind of wanted to get your thoughts on this, because this is not popular today. In fact, this is kind of the anathema phrase in today's society. You know, a parent says, you know, to their kids, you need to do this because I told you so. That's kind of like, oh, no, you can't say that to your kid. That's no. And he said, why not? You know, and he says that, and this is a common theme for him. This is one article, but this pipes up over and over in his articles that in parenting, you've got to lead with confidence. You've got to believe that you're in charge, and you just show that in 100 ways. By the way, you just quietly go about telling your kids what to do and expecting them to do it. And just even having that kind of demeanor about you. Parents, a lot of times, when they don't really feel like they're in charge, they may sign off on it on a theoretical level, but if they really don't feel like they're the one in charge, they show it by their facial expressions, by the handling of the encounter with the kid. And he says, you know, that you need to get this in your head. You are the parent, you're in charge. Of course, we know that's a biblical principle. He doesn't cite the Bible, but that's a biblical principle. Thoughts on that one? Anybody that read that? And you can disagree with him if you want. I mean, I'm not this is your chance to say whatever. Just thought that was helpful. Even, I don't want to make too much of a parallel here, but even even in training animals, like the dog whisperer, what's his name, Cesar Milan or whatever his name is. Of course, I guess he's in trouble with the animal rights people now because one of his dogs bit a pig or something. But anyhow, I don't know if you heard about that. Sandy and I, when we got a dog, our last dog, you know, she got some of his books, and he says the same thing about dogs. He says, you need to let the dog know you're in charge. That's just a basic thing, you know. Yeah.
I'm totally on board. I agree.
Yeah.
But then there's a perspective. Tripp talks about it, and I think it's helpful, and I'm trying to learn how to do it, but to allow for respectful appeal.
Sure.
Not debate.
Yes.
But I'm not always right.
So sure.
Giving my child the open door in the proper channels.
Yes.
To appeal the decision.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I totally agree with that.
Before or after he does what he's supposed to do?
Well, that would be after, of course.
I hope so.
But now, again, I guess it depends on the circumstance, how critical it is. But yeah, as a general rule, yeah, it doesn't become a stopping point for holding up the process. You know, if they want to come back and say, hey, can we talk about my bedtime? You know, that example I gave you earlier in the series, as opposed to, you know, why do I have to go to bed this ridiculous time at 8:15 or whatever? Yeah, having a form for your kids to approach you is a good and reasonable thing. But just the idea here he's getting at, he's not even really speaking to that. He's just talking about the general demeanor that you need to have and the general outlook you need to have. It should permeate your thinking as an adult, and you shouldn't even have to question it. We will, because our society is, because of the first article, questioning us. Yes. Yeah.
And like a couple days ago, like I just stomped my foot back, and he just immediately kind of wilted. But like I'm still kind of debating in my head, like is that a good idea? Like am I stooping to his level? Am I losing my parental authority?
Yeah.
Like any ideas, any thoughts on that? Like oh, you can scream, I can scream too. Like.
Well, my first reaction to that is, I'm thinking that's not probably a way you want to approach it. But let's open it up. What do y'all think? Anybody want to speak to that or say, yeah?
I tend to think that if that affected change, this would be okay. As long as it follows the other rules you brought up.
Yeah.
If it affects change, what's wrong with it?
Certainly can't say it's wrong outright.
Yeah.
What question is it wise? Is it advisable?
Yeah, and that's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, because, like, he didn't keep stomping his foot. Like, he, like.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I guess I could see it could be a demonstration, but I would watch that and see how it goes after a while. Make sure that's not, because generally speaking, I tend to want to deal more straight up with things. You know, just straight out. What did we talk about with stomping your feet? You know, what did mommy tell you? And now mommy has to deal with that.
And,
yeah. Well, yeah, at some point, it could be a couple things. It could be that just a process that has to play out, or it could be that maybe there's some things about the way discipline's happening that's not effective. We're going to talk about some of that today. Maybe that could be helpful. I don't know. But, yeah.
I would also say a caveat to that is depending on those certain things in the house, what they're being taught. In other words, if it's being shown, and it may or may not be, but if it's being shown specifically that this is over here and this over here is unacceptable behavior, this over here is acceptable behavior, then, I mean, if they are specifically being taught that this is unacceptable behavior and then perhaps you're doing it back to them, then there might be, I don't know, eventual confusion there where it's like, okay, I can't do this, but... So this is adult behavior, and why is it wrong for me, and it's okay for you?
Yeah.
I don't know. If there's a gray area, maybe that's not as big a deal. I would just say that depending on depending on what's being gotten at there,
right.
You probably want to also be careful that you're not setting the precedent of, you know, it's okay for someone to do it back to you if you do it wrongly in the first place or something.
Yeah, and those are some of the things that were kind of going through my mind at some level when I first heard the question. I'm trying to think about yes or no, right or wrong type of thing.
It falls under that ideology or that philosophy parents have. They don't think about it very often, but it turns into a do as I say, not as I do. That it's okay for me to do it because I'm the adult, but you do what I say.
Yeah.
And that just breeds rebellion because a child needs to be able to mirror and to learn by example. That if you want your child to follow a certain path, then you better be willing to do the same thing. So your speech, if you're angry, you know, shouting, hollering, well, then your kids are going to mirror what you're doing. And so, but it's hard not to always get into that thought of, no, just follow what I say. You do what I say. It's our actions that speak louder than our words. So our actions and how we discipline or how we're responding to them, most likely just shocked them.
Yeah.
Stomping your foot.
I don't want to waste on life, but like, right. Like, I was just trying to show him, like, this is what how silly it looks.
But
the yelling thing, on the other hand,
I could see it.
Gotta work on that.
I could see it being more of a, whoa, mom just did that. But if you tried doing it again, it probably would backfire more, and he would start doing it more because he's not seeing a consistency of if mom said no, this is no. And then, and even though it's like you keep having to spank for the same thing over and over and over again, the consistency I think is what pays off in the long run. And it's so hard because time-consuming, and you feel like a brute.
Take like a 10-minute process.
Right, but it does pay off, and the key that gets to me, I have to remember, I have to control my temperament.
Yeah.
And if I can continue to smile and to show love, but remind them, this is not acceptable, and this is the consequence when you cross this line, this is what you get. Every time.
Yeah.
This is what you're going to get.
You bring up a good thing about the shock factor, and that's something you really got to watch for because sometimes we can be thrown off. You all, maybe you all haven't heard of the old Cheech Chong class, Sister Mary Elephant. Are you familiar with that? I should play that for you sometime before class. I know you've heard it, Martin. How many of you have heard that? Not very many. Okay. That's funny. It's a cultural assumption. When I was a kid growing up, everybody had heard that. It made like the pop charts, like a pop song, but it wasn't a song. It was a skit. And the essence of it is you had a teacher who was a substitute in the class, and the class was real unruly. This is back when things were starting to go downhill. It was in the 70s. And all these kids were, hey, man, go to camera. You know, just all kind of chatter going on in the class. And she was trying to get control of the class, so she kept saying, class, class. And then finally she goes, quiet, real loud. And everybody gets quiet because of the shock factor of her yelling. But then pretty soon they're right back to doing it again. So sometimes you can do something that seems to work because it has a shock factor to it. But guess what? That shock factor is going to wear out. And I had a teacher just like Sister Mary Elephant. He wasn't silly like she was, but it was a male. And he would get up and teach normally. When the class started not listening to him, he would just start to really boil over. And at one point, he would shout real loud. And it was shocking. He was so loud in the way he yelled and the way he reacted. It almost seemed out of character for him because he was mostly kind of a cerebral kind of guy. but it wasn't an effective approach overall. I think we're best sticking to the basics myself for the most part. And if discipline's not working, then we want to look at that and see why that's happening. See why it doesn't seem to be working. Because we know it will work, but if there's something not going right with that, maybe that's where we need to look a little deeper. So with that in mind, let's actually go back into, because we're actually going through discipline. Dealing with rebellion is our second point on how to raise wise and godly children. And I want to just do a quick review because we were right in the middle of our material last week and we just ran out of time. So the first thing we saw is when to spank. Anybody want to try to remember this for us? I'm gonna spin through it real quick, but just when is it time to spank? What are the things that have to be there? What do we say?
Disobedience.
Disobedience, okay.
To a clear directive.
What's that?
Disobedience to a clear direction.
Right.
You instructed them to do something, they've defied it.
That's right. You've told them, that, it's clear, they understand it, and it hasn't happened quickly, without delay. Because, you know, maybe if it was delayed obedience, it's still a problem. So, yeah, that's it. You told them what to do. They understood what you told them. They didn't obey right away, all the way, with a happy heart is one way we put that. And you can word that different ways. That's when it's time to spank, if this has happened. And if you don't make this your standard, if you go slack on this, you're going to have problems. And I want to warn you about something that I see happen a lot, especially seems to happen with moms. You can listen to their talk as they talk about what's happening with their kids, and you can tell that they're viewing themselves as a victim of their kids. See if you can follow me on this. In other words, instead of talking about, you know, what's going on with their kids and what they did to deal with it, it's like, oh, little Johnny or little Susie, he's just such a disaster. I went to the store the other day and I'm just so fed up. I just can't believe how they behave in the store, don't behave in the store, and so forth. Now listen to that language, and what's it sound like? The mom or the parent there is viewing themselves as a victim of a bad child. That's not reality. Reality is actually the child's a victim of you as a bad parent. That's kind of a shocker, because if you get yourself in that mode of thinking, my response, insensitive though it may seem, when my wife would sometimes, she wasn't inclined to do that, but something would come up and it would be an issue, or maybe this would happen at work sometimes, and I would just say, it sounds like a management problem. And that's just my way of saying, I think the fault lies in the one that's viewing themselves as the victim. That may be hard to hear, but think about that. If you find yourself talking about how bad your kids are and how your life is so horrible because of the way your kids are misbehaving, you can just never get them to behave right, there's a problem going on, and it has to come back at the feet of the one in charge. And so if you're not following this, if you're going through this list and going, yeah, but I know we're supposed to do that, but when you throw the butts in, you're opening yourself up for a problem. So just a reminder on that. Now we started going through how to spank, and I'm just going to kind of summarize. I don't want to try to go through the whole thing again. We talked about never spanking in anger. This is something that you do thought out. You're doing it because of a principle. That's not to say there won't be some level of righteous anger, but if you're out of control, send the kid to the room and wait until you've got your mind right. We had the example of Amy's mom that she brought up the week. We talked about that. Take your child to a private place. It's something that I would recommend. It's not a total requirement. We had some interaction with Nancy last week about that. Tell him what he did wrong. Have him acknowledge what he did wrong. There has to be interaction. You want the child to understand what this is about. This is not just because you've had it or some random thing where you just decide to, you don't want them viewing it as random. Even if it's clear in your mind, you need to make sure it's clear in their mind by having them tell you, what did you not do? I told you to do this. You didn't do it, did you? No. Now it's time to spank. Tell them how many swats they're going to get. This shows you're in control. And also, if there's need for further swats, it's because they escalated, not because of the original infraction. And after spanking, pick them up, hug them, express your love for them. This is a time for sweetness, if you've done your job well, and reconciliation, bringing yourself back together with the child back together with you. And that's kind of where we left off last time. We made this point, and I want to just throw it up here again, because this is kind of, we're right in the middle of it. At this point, after you've done the spanking and you've hugged them and everything's good, at this point there should be complete restoration between you and your child. The problem should be passed. If he's mad at you, if he refuses to receive your affection, then something is wrong. And we pointed to the principle in Hebrews 12 where it talks about how discipline yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. And Ted Tripp made this point: if discipline has not yielded a harvest of peace and righteousness, it's not finished. You may have to cycle back through, this time not based on the original infraction, but now based on a rebellion that's continuing. And this is, now we're into the new material. Do not allow angry crying or screaming in this context. The key word is angry. The proper application of the rod will produce some crying, but you must not tolerate angry crying, which usually evidences a lack of submission to the parent as well as to the discipline process. So there's a difference between, you know, still sniveling from out of sadness and from the spanking versus a rebellious screaming, angry crying. And I think as a parent, you'll know the difference. If you're seeing angry crying, that's rebellion. If you're just seeing a child that's sad and getting over the spanking, that's fine. That can be a part of the sweetness of you know, it's okay, we're back on track again. Mommy, Daddy does not like to have to discipline you, but it's something we have to do for your good, and God tells us to do it, and so forth. However you explain all that. A humble spirit and contrite heart are essential responses to biblical discipline. And then, again, this is Ted Tripp's recommendation. Pray with him. Yes. Yeah, if there's angry rebellion, that's another cause for spanking. That's something they should not be doing. They need to learn that.
What if they keep doing it?
You may have to go around with them a couple of times, and maybe you'll give them, if you've gone several rounds and you're concerned about how that's going, maybe they need some time to think about what they did. And so they stay in their room for a while, and you can say, we're coming back, and we're going to go around again. I'm going to give you a break for a while. But this is where you need to stick to your guns, I'd say. Thoughts on that?
A simple direction, like you're saying, they need to have a clear directive. Stop crying. Ours is close your mouth, because ours like to leave their mouths open and holler like they're dying.
Yeah.
So it's close your mouth and smile, because it's very hard to smile when you're really mad. So it's repeated. You need to close your mouth and smile. Smile at mama. Look at me and smile. And if they cannot follow that obediently, okay, you disobeyed again.
Yep.
I asked you to do this. You did not do it. That's disobedience. Turn around. You get so many more slots.
Yeah.
That was the clear, I gave you the line.
Yep.
This is what I want you to do. If you fail to do it, it's a choice. And then, therefore, spanking them again isn't confusing. Like, I'm just going to keep spanking you because you're crying.
Yeah.
Well, how do you know? The difference is because they fail to comply with what you're telling them you want them to do, to show an outward reaction of stop.
Yeah.
And Amy said earlier, it pays off. It really does. We had a major issue with Adam on this point.
Mm.
And then, you know, give a year or two.
Yeah.
And we don't have quite as much trouble.
Yeah. That was what we found, too. And I know it's harder for some parents than others. I know Sandy had days where she really struggled with this. We had one or two of our kids had temper tantrum issues, you know, and she would go round and round with them, and she would call me on the phone, and we'd be talking about it and so forth. I didn't seem to have that trouble with them. There was something about the way I presented myself to them or something. I don't know what all went into that. She just said it was magic in the male voice. Maybe that was it. I don't know. Or maybe there was just something about what they knew about me and how, you know, we could theorize about that. I generally did not have that problem with the kids, but some parents do. I understand that. And what you guys have shared, sometimes you've got to last through it. But if you give up, if you let them know that there's a way they can escalate and get out of it, now you've just left the door open. And you basically short-circuited your ability to discipline them, because all they have to do is just throw a fit, and they win. So.
Anger crying was big for me when I was a kid.
What's that?
Anger crying was big for me when I was a kid. For me, it was like the final, that's right, I got the last word kind
yeah.
of thing. Where it was just, man.
It was a form of rebellion.
Yeah, deep-seated.
Yeah. Anyhow, tough stuff, but I...
That's what I'm asking, because I know it's going to come.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's... what was this? I, I know my, I think it's my kids that have a joke about, you know, that God brings back on you what you brought on your parents kind of thing, you know. I don't know if that's true, but sometimes they think that's the case.
It's not been uncommon in the last several months for me to profusely apologize to Lindsay for my childhood, because it's going, like, it's like, well, if that were true for your childhood, then our child's not going to be any trouble. But I think my childhood trumps your childhood, unfortunately. And I'm so sorry for that.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, but I mean, my daughter, we went through a lot of trouble with her at one point, and she came back after she had kids and started having trouble with her kids, and she came back several times to me and said, "Dad, I want to apologize so much for what I did when I was a kid. I see it now in my kid, and I'm going through the same thing as a parent, and I realized suddenly what that was all about. I am so sorry. I really am," you know, and she just really, it hit home with her what she was doing at the time. So sometimes that's one of the things that happens when we parent, is we realize more things about our own childhood that we could never learn if we didn't have kids. It's easy to be in a theoretical mode if you've never had kids, and you may get it. I'm not saying you can't understand, but there's something about the practicality of having gone through it that really brings some things home a lot of times. So that could, you may find that happening. So he says, pray with him, encourage him with the fact that Christ has been given, because we're a people who sin. There's forgiveness in Christ. Christ can empower and enable him to obey in the future. So this brings a spiritual dimension into it, and you have to be sensitive to where your child is and all this. But as we pointed out, I think, last time, and I'll just make it a point here with this again, is that the aftermath of spanking is one occasion. It's not the only, but it's one occasion when the gospel can be brought home with your child. A lot of parents are concerned to get the gospel across to their kids, and they should be. And we do that in a lot of venues. We do this instructionally and spending time with them, teaching them. We're hoping you're learning that in church, though don't leave it to the church. You do it too. We're doing that in conversations we have about other things that go on. We're doing it in 100 ways if we're doing it right. We're going to get more into that when we get into training in righteousness and other areas. But this is one place where the gospel can be brought home. Why? Because just like the story I told you, what was it, last week or the week before, where one of the early realizations for me in my awakening to the gospel by the grace of God is when I was told I couldn't go a whole day without sinning, tried to do it and realized that was true. I couldn't. When a kid realizes, they keep getting spanked. They know at one level it's wrong. They certainly don't want the spanking. Why do they keep doing it? It tells them something about their nature and themselves. They begin to learn. There is something that the Bible tells us in theory, they begin to learn at a practical level. I am a sinner. I do need forgiveness. I can't do this. And so this could be a time for prayer and for the gospel. Now, I read different writers. Some writers go all over the... I'm talking about people who write books about training kids. Ones that I even like. And some writers are like, every word out of your mouth throughout the entire discipline process has to have the gospel in it somewhere. I'm just not there. I think the gospel's important. If you are there and you can figure out a way to make that work, well, that's great. I think it's something that needs to be salted in at strategic moments at the right time. I'd be worried about trying to make it, constantly in front of them to a point where they begin to just turn the volume down. That's what I would worry about. At making it a constant thing. Just some of my thoughts. Do you all know what I'm talking about? Have you read books that advocate this kind of thing? And I just look at that and think, I wouldn't be able to make that work that way. I would be worried about it. Be like, yeah, it's the God thing. I get it, you know. And a sort of cynicism setting in. Maybe there are parents who can pull that off. I don't want to say you can't do that. I was never able to work that way. I don't think if I went back and did it today, I could make it work that way. That's just me. Just my thoughts.
I'd be afraid that it would start to blend into their anger at the time. They're being punished, and they start to resent the whole gospel application, because that's what they're going to associate it with. If that's what you're shoving down their throat as you're spanking them, they're associating it with pain. Like, I don't want it.
Yeah.
And they push it away instead of after the punishment is over, talking about,
yeah,
Jesus was punished because of our sin. that reconciliation, the sweet time, that they associate the sweetness with the gospel, not the punishment.
Yeah, I like that way of describing it. Because it's, you know, as something you as a parent have to sense. If you sense that they really are repentant and they really do see what they did and they really are troubled about their own actions, that is a great opportunity to present the gospel. So that's my thought on it, and I would put it in this category here where he says pray with them. I think that's great. Again, this is something you have to do every single time. I don't know about that. I don't know that I would, but certainly it's an option that's good. No more time to press the claims. Better time to press the claims of the gospel than at this time, which we just said. A couple other considerations when spanking, because we're going to run out of time here before too long. In order, this is me. This is not. Although Ted Tripp says this. In order for a spanking to produce the desired results, it must be painful. This is a big one, especially if you're not getting any effects from your spanking. Something to look at. Notice Hebrews 12. We've looked at this several times, but I'm gonna pick up some different words. For the moment, all discipline seems what? Painful rather than pleasant. So discipline should be painful rather than pleasant. Now, for some people, it's like, duh, but you'd be surprised, or maybe you wouldn't. I watch parents discipline sometimes, and the way they go about discipline, the kid's just like, la, la, la. It didn't have any effect at all. I'm thinking, that didn't do anything. Often parents will spank their children in a way that's not sufficiently painful, and then they wonder why discipline doesn't work. If it doesn't hurt, it probably won't work. Now, I know there are kids, it's just the very idea they got spanked hurts their feelings and upsets them, and maybe that works for them. But especially if you get one that's stubborn, it's got to hurt. It's got to sting. Of course, we give the warning with this. While causing pain is important, we must also be careful not to do anything that causes serious injury or permanent damage. We're not talking about damaging the child, but we want it to sting. Practical suggestions for making sure spanking is sufficiently painful to make an impact on the child while not causing serious damage. Here's some more thoughts. Anytime the Bible mentions the instrument used in discipline, it talks about using a rod rather than your hand or some other tool. Now, there are some writers that make a huge deal out of this. And if you use anything but a rod, it's like you've sinned. I just can't quite bring myself to push it that far, but I would certainly say, at a practical level, a rod is a good tool. I brought it this morning and forgot to bring it in, but we were shopping this weekend and I saw these little dowel rods, you know, little skinny dowel rods make a good little switch. Something about that size maybe for kids. Something that just stings but doesn't cause damage. Sandy has a cousin. He's an older guy now. He's in his 60s. He talks about they used to have him go out when he was a kid and pick the switch off of the tree. And if he brought one back, it was too small, they would go out and pick, and they would definitely pick one that he wished hadn't got picked. If he picked one that was too big, you know, he had to get just right in the range there. And that was part of the process for him. I don't know that I would advocate going that far with it, but the point is that you want to make sure you use an instrument that actually stings. And I remember, I may get this story a little bit off, but the basic idea is true. When our kids were going to a Christian school associated with our church that we were going to at one point. And the teachers were having a hard time getting the kids to obey. They actually spanked in the school. That's hard to imagine in today's world. But it was a Christian school associated with a church where spanking took place. And the spanking didn't seem to be getting us there. I mean, the kids were getting spanked and it didn't seem to matter. And the principal, who was also a parent and a guy who was pretty wise about things, he came in and watched what was going on, and he looked at the paddles they were using. They weren't little ping-pong paddles. I don't remember what they were. They were some kind of an instrument that weren't very helpful, and he recommended something a little closer to a rod. And so they started spanking with that, and boy, the effectiveness of discipline completely changed. I mean, the kids started going, whoa, okay, and they started listening. That's you want that effect. Now, if you want shock, there's where you should get your shock, if you will. Again, we're not talking about shock where you're hurting and damaging. I got to say that over and over. We're not talking about that would be abuse. We're talking about something that doesn't cause permanent damage, but does sting. It's got to hurt. It's got to be something that they remember that they don't want to do ever again if they can avoid it. I recommend all spanking be administered to the child's rump, as it seems the best place to cause pain without causing serious damage. Again, the Bible looks at the rod applied to the back. I would consider, broadly speaking, the backside. The rump seems like a logical place. That's just my recommendation in terms of practical reasoning. Don't really recommend. That's not to say if you don't have a toddler and you get the back of the leg or something like that. What's that?
They got a big padded diaper on.
That's coming. Yeah, that's a good, very good point. I'm going to make that in a minute. Yeah.
It was not necessarily that kind of, like, I can spank Taper now on his bottom, and it's great because he's in underwear. Like, it's easy to just pull that down, but with it, like, I kind of do spanking him more on his leg because just, like, to undo the diaper, I don't know if it's dirty.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I can see with a little kiddo, you know, a leg will work, an upper leg or something like that. Again, this is not inspired scripture, you know, you must hit directly on this target, but it's just sort of a recommended thing, and I'm thinking more as kids get a little older when they're not, a diaper's not an issue then, of course. Yeah, since you've made the point, I think it's my next thing on the slide, so you guys are thinking ahead. Be sure to remove any padding, i.e. a diaper, that might end up softening the blow. And one more thing on the same count. I recommend that a SWAT be administered while a child bends over, not running away. Okay? Now again, when you get into the various writers, there's all kinds of thoughts on this. Like Ted Tripp is really big on, yeah, you have them bend over, and it has to be over your lap because that makes them understand it's you're personally disciplining them. I don't have a problem with bending them over your lap, but I don't know if that's a requirement that I should throw on you. I used to have the kids just bend over apart from me, and this one, that was just my style. But the point is, you don't want, I've seen situations where a parent's chasing the kid around in the room, and he's you know, jumping up in the air. So this has got to be a controlled process. It's got to be done in a very appropriate manner where there's, you know, and there's going to be pain come out of the process, and they're not going to be able to get out of it. So watch for these little tricks, you know, having stuff in their back pockets. I mean, you know, we all heard the stories when we were in school. We used to talk about how we could get around the SWATs by having things in our pockets. And kids are always trying to figure out a way around the pain. But if the pain's not there, you're going to find that discipline doesn't work that much. In fact, it probably won't work at all. So that's really something to look at if you're not having an effect in your spanking. Is it hurt?
Yeah. They have to face away so they're not
right.
Turning things.
Yeah.
They have their hands right in front of them and they have to stare straight ahead or look at the window. Okay, and they don't know when it's coming.
Oh. Right. But yeah, that's very practical. I mean, that's you know, we can't make that the law of a land, but I mean if that works, that's an effective approach, I think. So, you know, whether it's over your lap or over, hand spread or grab your ankles. I mean, there's, you know, you hear a lot of different little things that are done. That the point is you want them in a situation where you could administer it, where it's painful, but you're not going to damage it. That's the other thing. If they're running around the room, you might actually cause damage, hit the wrong body part or something, and hit them in the head with something or whatever. You don't want that. You want a situation where you could administer it in a way that's controlled, that's going to sting but not cause permanent damage. Because the idea here is not to harm a child permanently. The idea is to drive home the point to the child, associate pain with what they did, and realize, don't do that again. Obey me. That's the point. All right. Well, let's see here. That's it for spanking, dealing with rebellion. Have I left any any stones unturned or any questions unanswered that I know we've had a lot of discussions. I'm assuming I haven't, but just want to throw that out one more time since we're ready to kind of move on. That's not to say we'll never mention it again, but as far as the details, the detailed attention to spanking, that completes that section.
I got to talk.
Go ahead.
You mentioned the thing about schools and, you know, well, a school, you know, where they spank. I was just thinking it'd be helpful to know, what are your thoughts on, like, other people, whether it's, you know, close family or whatever, spanking, or is that something that for the most part should be the parent of the child?
Yeah. I know societally it's very hard.
Right.
But certainly I think a parent can delegate that. Now, I wouldn't delegate it to the other kids. That would be a mistake, I think. I don't know. Maybe not, if you have a kid that's 15 and you've got a 2-year-old, and sometimes parents can have big age spans. I guess I couldn't even make that a super absolute rule. But generally speaking, especially kids if they're in the same age, roughly the same age bracket, you got one is 12 and one is 8, nah. But like a babysitter, when we gave our kids over to a babysitter, we said, now, you know, Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so, you know, we told them they're going to, we say right in front of the babysitter and the kid, we told them, if you don't behave yourself, they're going to spank you just like mommy and daddy would. You know, and they won't go through this whole process like we do, but just the threat could be there. I wish they still did it in schools, honestly, but we can't just turn society over. We can't change it. And you do have to be careful because they're going to take the same liability that you have as a parent, and you're kind of giving that over to them. That's the problem we have with that. It's not because I think it's a bad idea. I think it's a good idea, but if you have the kind of relationship with the babysitter or relative, it's, you know, your mom and dad are going to watch them if they would be inclined to actually do that, you know, whatever. certainly. Like we watched my daughter's kids over the summer, and there was always understanding that we would discipline them. I don't know that we ever actually did. They were a little older, and we managed in a way that you just don't even have to discipline most of the time. They listened to us because they knew you just listen. That's what you want as parents. You want to get to that point. You really do. And honestly, there's a lot. We talked about spanking, and I should go ahead and make this point. There is so much you can do, and it's hard for me to communicate what all goes into it, but there are nuances to the way you approach kids that you kind of, I've heard the expression used, you get your bluff in. And I can remember teachers in school, and I'm sure you can too. I had teachers in school that never disciplined, even though there was discipline going on in the school. I remember a little old lady who taught my 10th grade English class. I don't know if she ever disciplined a person her entire career. If she did, I was unaware of it. Little old lady, so small, she couldn't have hurt a flea. There was something about the way she conducted herself in that class. Nobody dared act up in her class. I don't know why. And then you got the guy who I told you that would yell at the class. He was a black belt in karate. He was a scary guy. But he couldn't manage and control the class. Yeah.
Tim.
Okay, one more example. My wife is back here in the nursery with some of your toddlers. She never disciplines the kids. She has no intention of disciplining those kids. She doesn't have any trouble with them. She presents herself in a way that avoids having to spank. Now, again, I'm still an advocate of spanking, and I'm not saying you just can completely get out of spanking, but I think if you present yourself in a way that shows confidence, that there are a lot of things that go into that, and maybe it's something you can read about and learn about. You can get around a lot of spanking just by the way you come across. That's all I'm getting at. Go ahead.
Yeah, so those who are still hesitant to the idea, I would say that a little bit of pain is much better than the alternative, because it can be, you could end up in a life and death situation.
Yeah.
You need them to obey immediately. There's a snake at their feet. They're about to run out to the, you know, high traffic area.
Yeah.
So plenty of scenarios where by training them to obey immediately, right away, saving their life.
Yeah, it really is. It's so good on so many levels, you know. And I just really strongly encourage you all to really commit yourself to this. It's easy to sit in a class like this and hear all the theory and think, yeah, I get all that. But then you just, it's kind of like James talks about, you know, you look in the mirror and see you know, dirt on your face and you go away and forget about it. You know, we don't want this class to be like that. struggle with this, and if you need advice or help, get with me or others in the class. That you can hear there's a lot of experience here in the class, and we're all in this together. I encourage you to do that, and don't just blow it off and say, that's just not for me, I can't do that. I've tried to give everybody a chance to raise any objections. I haven't heard any that we haven't spoken to, but I know there's going to be those who listen and say, yeah, I'm not going to say anything, but I'm not buying it, or yeah, I agree with you, but I just can't do it, or whatever your thinking is. I encourage you, don't give up and do that. Try to work through this. It's worth it. It's definitely worth it. So that's my plea to you. Well, before we close, just a heads up. Sandy and I are getting ready to go out of town for 2 weeks, so I will not be here next week or the following week. I think we've worked out a deal with Stephen and whoever else that there are going to be some TED Trip videos that will be shown on child training or parenting. So the subject will continue on. It'll just be a different medium. So I encourage you all to come, and then we'll see you in 1, 2, 3 weeks when we get back. I'll miss you all, and I hate having to break it up, but sometimes those things happen. So anyway, just want to let you all know. Father, thank you for our time. Thank you for this subject. Father, I do pray that those who are here this morning who are struggling with this or who are not seeing success in this area, that they would really come before you and try to work through this in a way that pleases you, take advantage of the Christian community around them, and just pray that we all could be, as a community, encouraging good parents, and those who are in that role could be good parents, and in so doing, that they would see yet another area in their life where you bless them by your word and by their obedience. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. You're dismissed.